Good morning.
Good morning.
I was very much looking forward to being here because I have some connections with this congregation that go back over many years, some indirect, others more direct. As John said, when my wife and I moved to Indianapolis from Nebraska in 1982, Carolyn Watkins' parents were on leave. He was studying for a year in California, so we lived in the Watkins home, and I can say that Carolyn Watkins was almost literally the first person to welcome us to Indianapolis because she was overseeing the family home at that time. Glenn Krieger is an acquaintance of many years, and more recently, not only a student, but an excellent student, in whose ministry I have great confidence. What I didn't expect was just how friendly you all would be. From the time John greeted me at the door as we made our way through the building, everyone was just so warm and embracing, and I think if I were not already established in a congregation somewhere else, I would be quite attractive at the Linwood Christian Church. Well, I'm going to read two passages of Scripture this morning, the first one before the Summer Singers and the second one afterwards. And actually, Pat has already read the first of them. It comes from the very beginning of the Bible, where the writer says, "In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the deep." Well, the second passage I want to read is from the Gospel of Luke, already identified as Jesus' call of the first disciples. At the beginning of chapter 5, Luke says, "Once while Jesus was standing beside the lake of Gennesaret, and the crowd was pressing in on him from every side to hear the word of God, he saw two boats there at the shore of the lake. The fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little way from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, 'Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch.' Simon answered, 'Master, we have worked all night long, but we have caught nothing. Yet if you say so, I will let down the nets.' When they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets were beginning to break. And they signaled their partners to come from the other boat and help them. And they came and filled both boats so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, 'Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful one.' For he and all who were with him were amazed at the catch of fish they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. Then Jesus said to Simon, 'Do not be afraid. From now on you will be catching people.' And when they had brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed him." Well, I graduated from high school in 1967, which makes this my 50th anniversary year, which has put me in the mind of thinking of myself as a young man. And I remember graduating from high school in the Ozark Mountains, thinking I had only a little less knowledge than God, and that a few years at our denomination's university in Oklahoma would quickly fill that gap. I had grown up in a disciples' church where we were immersed in the Bible, as I'm sure you are, week after week, day after day. And I thought, when I saw that my first course at Phillips University was Introduction to the Bible, I could prepare myself for a semester of napping during the class hour with my eyes open. Imagine my reinforcement of this inclination then, when I arrived at class and we began the first day with the passage from Genesis that I read a few moments ago. How many times, I thought, have I heard this passage? I can truly take a nap with my eyes open. But as so often when it comes to the Bible, I was in for a surprise. I had thought, as had most of the people I know, that according to Genesis, when God began to create, there was nothing. God made the world out of nothing. But our professor took us back into the mindset of the people who gave Genesis its form, and to the idea that at the very beginning of Genesis, it isn't that God creates out of nothing. Something is there. It's a chaos. It's a deep, we would call it a deep primeval ocean. No light, no darkness, but this form filled with energy, but not purpose. Potential unrealized. Power not serving any useful end. I'm a quasi-movie buff, and a few weeks ago I stumbled onto a black and white movie of Tugboat Annie. Remember Tugboat Annie? It happened that this was also a silent. And Tugboat Annie took her boat out into the ocean to rescue another vessel. And all you could see on the screen was water boiling up and thrashing and boiling up, and the waves beating against one another and backing down. And every once in a while there would be a crack of lightning coming across the screen, and you could just catch the glimmers of the white tops as they were illuminated by the lightning, banging, crashing, pushing, tugging, straining against one another. So much there, and yet going for no good purpose. Chaos. That's what it was like. Unbelievable energy, but unfocused. And the Bible has a special word for this that sounds in English a little bit like its meaning in Hebrew. And just for fun, I'd like to teach it to you and have you say it back to me. Tohu wabohu. Tohu wabohu. Doesn't that sound like the power of chaos? It does not always come through in the English, but this is the way the prophet Isaiah later described the people of Israel when they were in exile in bondage. It was for them as if they were in a period of chaos. You remember what happened. They had been living in Jerusalem, and the Babylonian army came up around the Fertile Crescent and besieged the land, encircled Jerusalem, starved them down until they could capture the city, and carted the leaders of the community across 500 desert miles from Jerusalem to Babylon, approximately present-day Iraq, and enforced them in an exile there. And later, Isaiah, rising up in that exilic community, describes the experience of exile as if it were a chaos. Sometime when you have a few minutes, look at Isaiah chapters 40 to 55. Look at the phrase, they walk in darkness.
That's the same language we have at the beginning of Genesis. God speaks to the deep because it is as if they are in the deep. Life as chaos. I get it. With one word, I can invoke the experience of chaos shared by nearly every person in this room at this moment. Charlottesville. With two words, I can invoke an experience that we had just last week. North Korea. You work at a place 20, 30, 40 years. One Friday, they give you a pink slip, a little compensation, and thank you, but our factory is on its way to Mexico. 20, 30, 40 years. And in one moment, chaos. When I was ordained in 1974, we disciples had about 900,000 participating members. Today, 270,000. I have an article in the last issue of the Christian Ministry magazine. I had an article in the last issue of the Biblical Preaching Journal. I had an article in the last issue of Pulpit Digest. It seems that at this juncture of my life, there is a kind of chaos at work in one of the institutions that I have valued most. Now, I believe we can have a vital future, but it's easy to feel like we are slipping toward the deep without a life preserver. But here's the thing. As we get back to Genesis, scholars agree that the writers who gave us Genesis 1 as we have it now were biblical editors who put this material together while the people of Israel were in exile. They shaped the very beginning of the Bible to speak to people whose life had come unhinged and they had been marched across 100 desert miles to live in an alien land. And here's another thing. The language of wind and swept does not quite catch the deeper meaning of the Hebrew. The word in Hebrew for wind is the same word for breath, which is also the same word for spirit. The spirit was at work there. And one of the Psalms gives a rendition of the word swept that gives it a little different connotation that is consistent with the purpose of the passage in Genesis. The psalmist says God sustained Israel in a desert land, in a howling wilderness waste. It cared for Israel, shielded Israel, guarded Israel as the apple of its eye, as an eagle stirs up its nest and hovers over its young. So God hovers over Israel. In Genesis, they translate it swept. But in the Psalm, they translate the same word, hover. And I think it is so much better to think in Genesis of the Spirit hovering over the deep. Like a mother eagle gathering the chaos under her wings, not quite ready to bring something out of it, but preserving the chaos for that moment when life and order God will bring out of it. What a picture. God hovering over the chaos of the world, awaiting that moment when order, life, and community will emerge. And in the Gospel of Luke, we hear Jesus coming to the shore of the Sea of Galilee. The men who would become his disciples had been fishing all night. They were middle-class business operators. Their nets had brought up nothing, to the point that they were already washing or cleaning their nets for the next day. And Jesus says to them, did you get it? Put out into the deep and drop your net again. The deep of Luke is the same as the deep of Genesis. It's a way of saying, put down your net into the chaos of life. And when they do what Jesus commands, they bring up their nets utterly overflowing. Now, here's a little side note. In the book of Acts, also written by Luke, Luke describes Gentiles as a chaos, a wilderness, a deep. The Gentile mission in Acts shows the disciples putting down their nets into the chaos and God bringing forth a harvest beyond imagination. Well, John told you that Linda, my spouse, and I have 5 children. And at an earlier stage in our family life, when they were 11, 8, 5, 5, and 2, Linda was off serving a congregation in another community, and my job was to get them up on Sunday mornings and get them to our home congregation. So you can imagine the scene at breakfast. A child comes wandering in, and I'm asking, why aren't you dressed? Then he comes back and I'm asking, where did you get those clothes? No, I can't make French toast just for you. At which point the orange juice turns over on the table and I uttered religious language, but not in such a way as to honor God. I was a deacon and it was my day to prepare the Lord's Supper. So I went to the church and went down to where we keep the bread, and it was in the freezer. No one had taken it out. So I had to unthaw the bread. And I was preparing the trays for communion, and you know there's a gadget that you squeeze like this. It's a little reservoir with the needle, and you squeeze it, and you go from little cup to little cup, filling the cups with the juice. I did not know, it had never occurred to me, that this instrument could be used like a squirt gun in the hands of a small child. On the way into the sanctuary, we had a rule that I call Dad's Rule, which is that every child goes to the bathroom before we go into church, whether we need it or not. So, of course, in that pregnant moment, right at the beginning of the sermon, after the preacher had stood up, and there was that expectancy in the congregation, but he had not begun to speak, our 5-year-old sang out, "Bathroom! Daddy, I have to go!" But then we got to the sacred table. And I had taught this passage from Genesis earlier this week. Actually, I did teach it at school just yesterday. We got to the Lord's table, and the deacons were lined up, that I was a deacon. And the words just came to me like a gift from God that Jesus is here, hovering over this world like a mother eagle, that when we partake of the loaf and the cup, we have a physical sensation of the Spirit hovering not only over the world, but over me and over you. If I have been there on the shore of the primordial deep, could I have imagined the world that would have come forward? If I had been in exile in Babylon, could I have imagined the homecoming that awaited? I don't know what to imagine of our world right now, but I do know this. I hear the wings of an eagle hovering over us.